I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
This piece was brought to you by Roberta's. Roberta'sPizza.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we bring you stories about the coldest, darkest season. We start in a California vineyard.
It's cold, but it's wet, and things are still alive. There's a lot of life in this soil.
We explore two frontiers of cocktail culture, luxury ice and the rise of non-alcoholic drinks.
The rocks traditionally becomes 25% of your drink's volume, and as such, it imparts smells and tastes.
And we investigate the risks facing New York City delivery workers during the harsh winter.
In the wintertime, after 2 hours of biking, it's quite easy, actually, for the bikes to sting upside down or slip or slide.
Tune in to this week's episode of Meat and Three, that's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E, for some food for thought to sustain you through the dead of winter. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Good evening and welcome to
Foam Mad About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
My name is Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Archived anywhere you can find great great podcasts, especially right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are here at the brewery at I've been thinking a lot about like old friends and neighbors, and I went to William Patterson. I had all my William Patterson friends over, and we played here at the brewery, Fifth Hammer Brewing Company, last week, and it was a really great, amazing musical Wednesday. We play every Wednesday, Beers for Ears. But we're here at the brewery with our really good friends from Hand Bryggeriet in Norway, and we're doing a collaboration today and are excited to host you for the show.
Yeah.
We are horrible at pronouncing names, and it took me a long time to practice that one.
So my name is Stefan. I'm sales manager of Hand Bryggeriet.
My name is Ragnar. I deal with sours and a little bit of everything.
We're delighted to have you here, Stefan. We met a few months back. I've been a fan of all the beers that you guys have for a long time. You guys are imported by Shelton Brothers here in the United States, and they've done a really great job putting your stuff out in front of us since we've long heard of you before making your acquaintance. And I'm excited that today is working out. How long have you been in town? What brings you to town? And then let's get deep and go way back on the history of Hand Bryggeriet.
Yeah.
The reason why we're here is, you know, we were at, the last time I was here was because of Shelton Fest in Denver. And I met you guys after fest. Our good friend Miguel the Beer Trekker introduced me to some breweries. He thought that I should know, like you guys, Transmitter, the fine folks at KCBC, the guys from Grimm, and yeah.
Yeah, man. So real quick, you know, we immediately got along because we have kind of a similar path. Like, we both started as musicians and now find ourselves in this beer world, which is also kind of why I started on this thing. How long have you been playing drums?
Oh, it must be, well, if I say how long I've been playing drums, I have to say how old I've gotten. I think, like, I really started playing drums when I was 6. That was, like, just a snare. So I've been playing drums for more than 30 years. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, wow.
Do you think that your love for drums is kind of one of the pathways that got you to love beer in a particular way?
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's all about the subculture. It's all about loving not the frame of the picture, but little details. Mm-hmm. It's that extra quality of life. What made like Edvard Munch's pictures so great? What made writing of Ibsen so great? You can't really quantify that, but it was something different. It was something new, and I think With craft beer, it's the same. It's like it's a subcultural thing. It's an urge, a want for something more, like the beat generation in literature, like discovering new things. For me, like it was with music, it was jazz and hip hop, and I was really excited last time to come to New York because I grew up like listening to Jens Schofield, Desi Martin Wood, and to me, jazz and beer sort of represents, or it feels to me at least, like it catches the pulse of the city in a very nice way.
Yeah, man. So let's talk about the beginnings of Han Verdier.
Or how you guys got into beer and fermentation.
I can start. It was actually an accident. I was actually doing like work training, like a trainee, for 3 months, and then I was hired. And then I worked in warehouse, and then I started brewing right away, straight onto sours, at home, of course. And then I was after a few years, I was given the responsibility for the barrel aging program. So it's that's how that happened. Stefan has another story.
Ragnar makes that sounding really easy, but it's a great puzzle, really. I sort of, to me, it was happenstance, and you know, being the sort of personality I have, Hand was my first, you know, that was the first brewery I really fell in love with back in like 2007. That's when I first had a beer called Bavarian Weizen, which was their take on a Hefeweizen. And to me, like, that just opened so many doors flavor wise. So I really, really came obsessed after that brewing. I did a lot of tastings with both beer and single malt scotch. And back in 2012, I think it was 2013 maybe, I was up at a place called Sifjell, which is my local brewery, and I was talking to their CEO, and like, I can't find hand beers in my town anymore. What's going on? And they said, "Oh, we don't know. You should call them and ask." Ha 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 ha. So I did, and I talked to their sales manager at the time, and I said, "Like, dude, where's my beer? Like, I can't find your stuff." "Well, if you don't think we're doing a good job, we should do some. You should do something about it." So I did. And
then he started selling beer for us on part time, and then after a while, we were hired full time, and then
and then I became sales manager last year. Was it a year before?
Like, I don't remember.
Things are popping so fast.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. How big? How many people work with Hungry?
We're 12 people.
Yeah, I think we're 12. Yeah.
So still, that's not a large operation at all.
No.
We have a really automated system, so we only need two brewers, basically.
Right. Okay. And you guys, you were telling me you brew generally between 2 and 3 times a week currently. On
yeah,
the
I think that's a norm. That's a norm now, right now. As we are speaking now, they are in a very hectic stage because we are moving the brewery, so they have to brew a lot and bottle a lot,
right?
And can of course, can and keg.
Sure.
So I think they're quite hectic right now, but we're here, so drinking beer and talking to the microphone, so it's gonna be more relaxing for us.
But usually, you are in charge of 3 fooders and about 100 barrels.
More than 100 barrels, but it's
as far as the wood program.
Yeah, no, we have sours and we have clean beers on wood, so we do both. So it depends on, we face barrels in and out. What we have in, like, we should have like a few hundred barrels, like almost like sours ready for blending. But we also have the next year's Christmas, like spiced beers, like Mary deals with. We have already brewed that for next Christmas. They are like aging now to mellow out for before bottling. So the total volume changed all the time. So I don't remember actually. I think like 150 small barrels or something like that.
Why are you moving again? So you're moving breweries, but this is the fourth time you're moving, right?
Yeah. But now we know our stuff. So Well, they're making a new hospital at where our brewery is right now. Okay. So, no, beer is good for your health too, but
yes.
I guess a hospital would work.
It might be even better for you.
Yeah,
health.
It might be
better.
Arguable.
So, for people that aren't familiar with your brewery, talk about some of the some of the beers that you guys make, brew, and the sours and the clear beers.
You know, in the U.S., we're mostly known for our stouts and sours, and our farmhouse beers. Our signature thing has like been to make a oat grain sour, and it's like really tart, like more punchy than like the Rodenbach. We also like for our farmhouse beers, we like to have just a dash of smoke malt to sort of. When Hans started out in 2005 with Egil, Arne, Jens, and Runa, those guys before homebrewers, like most of us, like start out like, and they brewed on a 200 liter kettle first, I think it was, but things quickly just escalated for them. But they wanted to. Nögnö was the only other brewery at the time, and they were like specializing in IPAs,
right?
And so the guys at Han, they wanted to do more rustic beers, for my part more interesting beers maybe. So that's what we're known for in the US at least. We have been working with Shelton since 2007,
I think. Yeah.
Now, how widely distributed are you guys in the U.S.?
I think it's 48 states, right?
Yeah.
Pretty cool. And then, what do you have in Norway that you don't send over?
Oh, we make so much IPAs. But you know what? Hops don't travel well. So, we have a Citra Pale Ale called Homesus, which is 4.5. We have this thing in Norway where we're anything that's stronger than 4.7 has to be sold by the wine monopoly. So a lot of our volumes is like session ales, session
right.
beers.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's about 70% or something like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Our session.
Yeah. Our like
yeah.
70% of what you make.
Yeah.
So if they're not sold in the wine monopoly, where are they sold in Norway? I'm always interested about, you know, in other beer, like,
yeah,
beer
there's
legislation.
Like, there's, like, three big chains in Norway, like, buyers groups, and we sell to those three.
And then that goes to grocery stores? Or
supermarket distribution.
Okay.
So we just got a deal for, we have a new Session Citra Mosaic IPA, and of course that's a dime a dozen here, right? So, in Norway, we'll sell that to maybe 400 stores.
Wow.
400.
Yeah, and we'll just keep...
Rolling. And those are cans? All cans?
Those are cans, yeah.
Cans, cool.
It's 440 mil cans. So I don't know how that translates to ounces.
Is that 12 or 14 or something like that? Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Cool.
You spoke earlier, like, if we have 40 brewers brewing in New York City... And if we were to do that, if we were to compare it per capita to Norway, we would have to have like
350 breweries.
Like 350
in
breweries.
New York City,
so,
yeah.
So how many, I mean, what is the scene like there for brewer for people? Or what is the beer culture, what has it meant in Norway and how has it changed over the last?
You know, I think it's a very vibrant scene right now. There's a new upcoming bunch of breweries. Some of my favorites are Ecoteed. They do all raw ale beers.
Meaning no boil?
No boil, yeah. And they have their own mix of kveik that they use. We have Voss Brewery.
Meaning they're
Voss.
Mixing yeast?
Kveik.
Yeah,
kveik yeast.
Kveik
yeah.
is Norwegian farmhouse
yeah.
yeast. So.
Viking yeast from Norway.
Yeah. Yep.
Voss, yeah. Ego down from Fredrikstad is pretty good. They do some Quake stuff as well, Quake IPAs. They're one of the most sort of progressive breweries, like up to date. And of course, there's us and Larvik breweries like Gin Agir. Of course, Larvik is the biggest one.
Well, since we're talking about beer culture, what's the beer culture like as far as the like consumers go, or like the bar culture? So you guys are also selling your beer to bars as well?
Yeah.
Are bars, you know, how are they different than the bars that you visit here or that we're familiar with?
It's quite similar, actually. The bars, like, they have, the bars look quite, in the cities, of course, mm-hmm. there's a difference from countryside to city, and
right.
but like, the New England-ish style, we see that everywhere, but it's quite similar to the bars here in your city, with what you can buy, what's trending, what you can move.
I think for the beer scene in Norway, the biggest problem for bars is that they're overtaxed.
Okay.
A lot of beer, beer in general in Norway is severely overtaxed.
We have the highest in the world tax on alcohol.
Ooh. Yes.
So wow. Is that passed on to the consumer? So is beer quite expensive?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But it also means that we have to sell a shit ton of beer to make money.
Right. So volume
is king.
Yeah.
With that, we're going to take a really quick break. Thanks for listening. For Men and Fat.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Welcome back to For Men About It on Heritage Radio Network.org.
We're here at the back of Fifth Hammer Brewing Company. We are actually in the middle of brewing a collaboration, and by that I mean Brett's doing a lot of work over there, Brett Taylor, and while we popped out to have an interview with our friends from Han Brewery. Thanks, Brett. We are brewing a Norwegian farmhouse ale because Andrea is in Norway. They're about to go to their fourth iteration or their fourth location, and brewed a lot of really awesome beers. And this beer that we're making today is using a kvek yeast. Can you guys explain what that is?
Kvek is basically it's old farmhouse yeast passed down from generation to generation.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, like, kvek is the western part of Norway's way of saying yeast, right?
Okay.
It's like the old way of saying it. So for a lot of people, it's like when people are talking about kvek, it's like, oh, yeah, talking about yeast. No, talking about kvek. Yeah, talking about yeast. Like.
Right.
So, yeah, it's super strong Viking yeast. And, like, it can ferment at any level, really. Okay, we have to talk about Celsius because when we're talking about Fahrenheit, we just get
Totally. Yep.
So, like the Voss strain, it can ferment at 35 Celsius.
It's 95 degrees.
Yeah.
Right. 95 degrees.
Yeah.
Same with the Hornendahl. And so the three most common that we see, or at least we purchased ours, it was not handed down to us from Norwegian farmers. It is banked at Omega Yeast, and they have three versions. They have Hothead, Voss, and Hornendahl. We've used Hornendahl in a couple of things. We used all three, split one batch down to taste the difference, and chose Hornendahl. This is our first using the Voss strain. But I say all this to say that I guess I want to know what yeast or what vein means within it, or what the underlying kind of thing, why this is different yeast. I mean, it is a substrate of Saccharomyces cerevisiae, but yet there's still other strains that still fall into
I think a lot of what makes kvek interesting, except for like being this Viking yeast that can take a punch, is a lot of those original strains that hasn't been cleaned out to the, like, by like
totally isolated.
Yeah,
right.
They have a lot of funky bacteria, mm-hmm. which make them like, you know, you. When you clean down your strains like that, they are going to change a little bit. Maybe be a little bit more mellow, not have as much crazy flavor. But as a workout, of course, I don't think any strain is as good as kvek.
Yeah. we find it interesting because as American brewers, it has not been that popular or hasn't been shouted out, but it's not like this is a new strain.
Well, it's new in the U.S. Like, we've only had access to it commercially.
Yeah, it was new. It's commercially available.
Yeah.
And that's just happened in, like, last 3 years.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I guess we wonder why, because it's such a great workout for Carson. But we've seen that the turnover beer is faster. And generally, I'm saying this, you know, we know this, but I want to say it for our audience. Generally, a yeast strain that ferments too fast, or if you ferment too fast, you can have a bunch of off flavors that you don't want. However, this, the Hisbeck, does not do that. It ferments fast and clean.
Yeah.
And also, like, so they get more carry. If you actually use not enough yeast, like, you under-pitch. And you ferment at, like, traditionally too high temperature, you get more of the, like, the citrusy the flavors out of it. Like, so it's a hard worker, yes. It will make beer in 2 days, but of course you have to clean up all the sulfuric substances and things like that. So it's, you can brew on Monday and be finished bottle condition on Friday, but you should probably do it 10 days extra.
Fresh beer.
But like any strain, it wants for conditioning time to kind of do its own cleanup of, all the other flavors.
Yeah, we use a month on our quake beers.
Month turnaround for the connector.
Yeah. So that's 3 days of fermentation, and the rest is cleanup. So flocculation.
And flocculation. So when do you crash it after initial fermentation? So
remember that?
No,
I think they just let it until it's flocculated sufficiently.
Right.
Maybe cool it down a little bit, and then it flocculates a bit more, and then crash it after it's the yeast has settled out sufficiently.
Yeah, I gotta say that's one of the biggest takeaways that we saw when we did the experiment between the Hothead, the Boss, and the Hornadal, is they all flocked without having to crash it at all. We kept it at ambient temperature, and it created its own yeast cake. I was impressed by that. It didn't stay in suspension like a lot of other saison yeasts would, unless you crash it. So that was it. In your souring program and your aging program, you said you generally do primary in the stainless and then go to...
Oh, no, we always do primary in stainless because we have a separate building for the directed... you have to separate the sours. Like, what is sour beer? For me, it's a mixed fermentation in the vessel. And we don't do that. We only do primary in the clean brewery. We only do one strain, a normal yeast strain, and then we take it out to the next building, and then we add... Brett and bacteria. Sometimes we put it on seal, most of the time we put it on barrels, and we use either fooders or wine barrels. Sometimes we use aqua barrels, but mostly fooders or wine.
We really like to let barrels speak, so to speak.
So when we brew it, we don't really know what beer we'll use it for. We have like this. We have this brown, red Flemish base. We put on both wine and fooder, and they will, of course, they will taste differently. And then we can take out the volumes we want. Maybe we mix with some fruit or not, or maybe mix with like a blonde sour, and then we get our different products. So
cool. We have sort of gotten to the point now where we have so many barrels that we can blend what we want. And that's where that's really the way we're going now. We also want to get a movable cool ship that we can take out to local farms and let it just sit with a apple tree for a day and go back and use that with our house culture
How do you guys evaluate your barrels as far as like when you're sitting down and thinking about blending?
Well, first we smell, then we taste, and then we think like, okay, this barrel is very good, but it's too sour. So then we maybe okay, but some of the other ones are quite mild, but good, but a bit too boring. So then we have like something interesting. We mix with something good but boring, and then like that's doesn't have to be different beers. It's just like different barrels, but that's an assessment you make. Okay, so some acetic acid may be good in a Flemish red, but not too much. So that's why you can blend your way something like that. But like true beer faults, like if it smells like burnt rubber or like Band-Aid, you just have to dump it.
Yeah. So how common, you mentioned a brewery that does, how common is raw ale?
It's not very common.
It's not, but it used to be more common. Did it used to?
It used to be just a way of brewing.
Right.
So back in the days of yore, as all historians say.
And I haven't done much of it, but I guess the people I do know that who try it, it's not necessarily not pasteurizing. It's like, you know, just not boiling, right? So we're still coming up to 180 and pasteurizing-ish, sort of the word. 180, I have a Celsius map for you. There's confused faces here going on.
Yeah, that's probably fine. Yeah.
Whatever pasteurization temperature is in Celsius.
Yes. And they'll hold it there, and then they'll just not get it to boil, and then they'll knock out. And then, so at least inoculating with control.
And the no boil gives you a really nice mouthfeel.
Because you have the proteins and things like that, it doesn't settle out.
They
stay in the beer. So you get lucky, especially for the sours, you get a good body on a relatively low ABV beer.
Yeah.
So and you'll maintain the body even though you know some of the wild bacteria and yeast will be eating more of the sugar.
Yeah, they will eat proteins as well.
Right.
But proteins and glycerol and things like that, it will give it's like a poor mash. It's not done properly, but you get, if you do like a wild culture, you will get more budding.
Yep.
So.
Okay. Cool.
And I've seen a few breweries done no boil for sort of New England IPAs.
Yeah.
It's absolutely something that I'm looking for us to do at some point. No boil sour IPA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe with an American brewery in Norway.
Yeah, let's bring an American brewery to Norway to try doing that sometime. That'd be fun.
Maybe someone from Long Island City. likes to play with hammers.
that place you're talking about, that was an actual city for a mere 27 years before it became a part of New York City. From 1870 to 1897, that place was a city of its own. Now it's just a neighborhood.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I keep having to defend that to people because they're like, oh, you're from Long Island City? It's a city? I was like, no, it's not a city. And it's not Long Island either. It's very confusing. I'm starting to learn a little more of this. So speaking of that, speaking of Norway, you guys hold a festival, and we're honored to be invited to come out. Tell us a little about the festival and who shows up for it and what kind of things it's done for the beer community.
Yeah, this year, Hanfest has been my baby, in a way. I was really looking at... that there's so many beer fests going on now. And how do you set that fest apart from all of the other ones, like apart from being where you are? So I've said this year that we're only doing breweries that that do a little bit of like local ingredients and some mixed fermentation. That's one of the things, because I do think that just having that as a choice, it leaves you to having great breweries, because you'll get breweries that are adventurous, that like to experiment, but also know their game. Because you know, when you do get into like mixed fermentation and all that jazz, that's where the fun really begins. You play around with fermentation. So we have you guys, Grim and Finback from Feinstein of New York or New York City. Santa Adarius, Horace H. Ailes. Oh my God, I'm getting old and senile. Cascade is coming. There's someone else from Black Project.
Oh,
they're coming.
Oh, cool.
It's a pretty good crowd just from the US. And from Sweden, we have our friends from Bregeria, which are probably one of our favorite breweries. They do all mixed fermentation. And I think I have yet to have a disappointing beer from those guys.
Yeah, we did a collab a couple of years ago, and I think they've been bottling that or hopefully they've been looking that when we're traveling here.
I really hope they haven't, because I haven't made a label yet. And popples from Sweden. Popples, they don't do mixed fermentation yet, I think, but they do all organic malts and that things that survive.
We're excited to bring the collab that we're making today to it. So some of it will stay relatively clean and serve in our tap room, but some of it will let the beer tell us what we're going to change about it. Like, we're going to send some into some barrels, probably do it with some fruit, maybe tart cherry is kind of our thing, and bugs or no bugs is the question when we get there. Some of it Mary's going to throw into the fun tank, and we'll save some for bringing it. I'm very excited about it. Speaking of that, I'm going to go talk to Mary really quick about knocking out.
So let's talk about your neighboring countries, right? So you're inviting some breweries from Sweden. How much beer do you guys get from, you know, the rest of Scandinavia versus the rest of the world?
Oh, we get so much beer from Sweden, and that's down to our politicians not doing their job. The taxes are so much lower in Sweden, and they have been getting lower. What we're seeing, exports from Sweden have never been higher. And for the first time in many, many years, craft beer has stopped growing in Norway. And that is really down to our politicians not paying attention. We're very unfortunate that we have a very small religious party in Norway that they're vastly overrepresented by how many people voted for them, because they have just enough seats in the house that they give the current government the majority. So that really makes them
and they are teetotalers or against?
Pretty much. So
they're not pro drinking.
No, they're not very pro. We're not getting as much from Denmark, even though the brewing scene there is pretty good as well. But for what it's worth, the Swedish brewing scene has been amazing in the last few years. So that's also a part of it, of course.
Yeah. It's about the neighboring countries.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the low ABV thing, do you think that's ever going to change?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
It will change at some point when it's really up to the majority, I think. For me, it's right now it's fine. It's not the biggest concern we have in Norway, but I would love to be able to sell our beers directly from the brewery to people and ciders.
So have a tasting, because no brewery has a tasting room there now.
Well,
right?
They have a tasting room that's maybe open once a month.
Okay.
But also be able to sell canned beers to the consumers directly, that is something I really want to do. Because then we'll at least keep some more money ourselves.
Yeah. And with the way trends are and making the cost of making a good beer higher and higher, because we're just dosing things at higher rates, that direct-to-consumer sale is a lot of the lifeblood for a lot of American breweries. Being able to sell directly and have those higher margins to keep making those higher or more expensive beers.
Yes, with the Hazy New England IPAs and cost of all the hops, it's not very sustainable if you base yourself on selling those type of beers through a third party and then to another party again.
Yeah.
Actually, the worst issue is mostly the distribution time, because we want to sell it fresh.
Yeah.
But the distribution chains, they don't allow, they don't will not buy it unless there's 6 months best sell by date or something like that. And that's basically when you should have drinking everything.
Right.
Oh.
That's just how the system is right now. I'm trying to work around it. It's always the first batch that is the problem with wine monopoly. And, you know, they've taken a lot of good strides to being better for beer. Now they mostly sell wine and spirits. But beer is increasing, and they have gotten a lot more cool storage. They're trying to work faster, so we should definitely give the people at Wendland the props for really trying to work it out. But it's always the first batch that's the problem, because you've got to register a beer in. If I want to sell a beer in May, I have to register the beer in January.
Oh, yes.
And I got to have it ready around March, so it will be available for the shelves in April. And by then, beer is... It's a hazy New England style beer. It's dead.
Right.
So, but for the second batch, it's fine because it's in the system. So the minute we have a fresh new batch beer, it's just a sentence. But that first batch, that's the...
That's an interesting plan.
Yeah.
But we don't want to make you late for an airplane back to Norway. How long is this flight you guys got?
Seven hours?
Yeah, for me. For you, it's longer. You have to
I have to wait a long time. I will probably not be drinking any beer while I wait. I had enough this last
couple days. Well, yeah, you put to you did a couple different collabs over here. You did Finback and Grimm, and those might make it out to the festival as well, right?
Yeah, I hope so. And we also did one with the Norway Brewing Company up in Maine.
Cool.
Charles Magnemelius, he used to work at Larvik in Norway, but he grew up in Tromsø, so he speaks Norwegian, which I didn't know, so when he like started talking to me in my local language, I was like, something funny about his English, but I can't quite play what it is. So we made a two-way collab because we really like to do two ways and not just one.
Yeah, understood.
We're coming in May.
Yeah.
So we made a Kveik Saison there as well with his house culture and mix, which we're and since he's from Norway, we'll call it Dad Jokes from Norway.
Because they were telling some bad jokes when we were harvesting yeast.
Dad jokes are the funniest.
I agree.
Like, Dad, I'm thirsty. Hi, thirsty. I'm Dad. Classic.
We had a dad joke off here recently, and it was quite fun at the time. People came in.
Strong on the dad jokes.
Sure.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for sitting down with us and for collaborating with us.
Thank you for having us.
We look forward to tasting this and playing with it.
Thanks for doing it, Brett.
And we're super excited about coming to visit you guys in Norway.
Yeah.
Forward to see you guys.
Really excited. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
We'll do a follow-up, too.
For sure.
Yeah.
Fun men about it.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah. And my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.